Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where crunch time is what happens when one of the hosts tries to eat a stick or cardboard or paper in general, or, you know, paper products. He's actually not in the room right now, which is unusual and suspicious, but we will persist because we are headed down the stretch of the NFL season. I don't know when the stretch technically begins, but it feels like we're firmly in the stretch. The air is cooling even here in Los Angeles. It was 60 degrees this morning. The Seattle Seahawks are 10-2, and I am delighted to be joined by an old friend of the show who has a new job. He now covers the Giants and Jets for the New York Daily News. Welcome back, Charles McDonald.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I've upgraded a little bit to the pinnacle of NFL football with the Giants and the Jets, who have combined 6 wins on the season. It's been a great experience so far.
You can find Charles on Twitter at 4verts. I've been trying to get him to use his own picture as an avatar for at least a year now, but he has refused so far. What is it right now?
I've upgraded to a squad pick, so it's like 6 of my friends and me. So you got to guess which one's mine.
That's like an online dating move, I hear.
Or is that? Oh, you hear?
I'm too old. I missed that whole boat. We're not going to talk about the Jets, sadly, because I think if we were coming off of a great Sam Darnold performance, I might force you to talk about the man I like to call Sammy Dimes. But we're gonna pass on that. But we are going to talk about the Giants. You know, there's a few interesting games that I want to discuss. One of which is, I do think Giants-Eagles is actually interesting. I think the Eagles are really interesting. I want to talk about Ravens-Bills. I want to talk about Titans-Raiders. So a lot of teams we haven't really given a lot of attention to on the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. But before we get to that, Charles, we've got some breaking news. Ron Rivera has been fired. Now, I'll just say first, I think the fact that he was let go is not incredibly surprising. What's surprising is that it happened now. What was your first reaction?
Yeah, that was my takeaway too, because I don't think anyone would have been surprised if he got fired, you know, on that Black Monday at the end of the season. But the fact that it happened now with 4 games left in the season just seemed a little odd, because I don't really see the reason for it now. I mean, maybe it was just like the embarrassment of losing to Washington and the way they lost to Washington, but I don't know if you can put blame on anyone on that last play, on anyone except for Kyle Allen himself, because that was just unbelievable. I don't know if you will ever see a play like that again in the NFL where you take a 23-yard loss on like 4th-and-2. I don't really get the timing with that, but, you know, I think it all points to what a lot of people have been speculating is Carolina is headed towards like a pretty hard reset in the offseason. And, you know, we still don't know if Marty Herney, if he's going to stick around as a GM, but there's been all types of rumors all season, maybe even before the season, about Cam Newton playing for a new team next season. And, you know, it feels like Ron Rivera being fired, even if the time is a little bit weird, is like the first step towards them, you know, almost the first step towards David Tepper making this franchise his own.
I should add, Tuesday's episode of ESPN Daily, my other podcast, is about Cam's future. Jeremy Fowler, the guest, speculates about a few teams he might be going to: Chargers, Bears, ones you've heard before. He also threw out the Saints, which is just an incredible troll move. And I encourage you to tell the Panthers fan in your life that that is a possibility, a very unlikely possibility, but a hilarious one nonetheless. I think you're right about all of that. I think, especially Kyle Allen, should be deserving the blame for that loss. And you know, you look at this season, and it in some ways it's hard to put any of this at Rivera's feet, given the fact that they lost Cam, that he was obviously never healthy, that Allen has, you know, turned the ball over a lot in inauspicious moments. I will say, he does deserve a lot of scrutiny, I think, for the performance of this defense in certain games, because that's his unit, right? And they have so much talent, especially in that front 7th, but they rank 23rd, I think, 21st overall in defensive DVOA and 32nd against the run, Charles, which is shocking. And I think Darius Geis tweeted sorry, Ron Rivera, which is really not very nice. So I think that, you know, would be the one reason why I would, you know, put a little bit more of this at his feet. I wonder if maybe they fired him early to give him a shot. Like, he's a guy who, in the same way I think people were saying this about Mike McCarthy when he was fired midseason, obviously it didn't happen. But Rivera's a guy where I think you're going to hear a lot of rumors about him going from this job immediately to another head coaching position.
Yeah, I think so too. And you make a good point about the defense because, I mean, we talked a bit before the season about how good that front seven was. And
yeah.
I don't know if anyone was expecting them to be as bad against the run as they did. I mean, not just bad, but like you said, you know, probably the worst run defense in the league when you have all that front seven talent. And, you know, Luke Kuechly, I don't think he's, you know, the unquestioned best linebacker in the league like people used to consider him, but he's still a good player. And, you know, Shaq Thompson, Quan Short, Gerald McCoy, you know, they have the big names up front, but it just hasn't translated to a lot of production in that front seven. So I'm not sure how much of the blame he should get for that. Obviously, as a defensive guy, he does deserve some blame. Their pass defense has been, like, inconsistent. If you just look at the raw adjusted net yards per attempt, I think they're fifth in the league right now, giving up 5.2 adjusted net yards per attempt. But if you look at their expected points on Pro Football Reference, they're actually in the negative. And I think they're the only team in the top five pass defense that has a negative expected point. So, you know, it's almost like they're giving up these big plays, and at some point that has to fall back on the guy who's getting this thing organized. And they tried to make a little bit of an adjustment by releasing Rashawn Golden, who they picked in the third round last year. That wasn't really working out for them. But, you know, they're kind of stuck in this place, especially now that the quarterback situation is uncertain, where they're stuck in between, like, trying to win now and also build for the future. And, you know, when you get stuck in those situations, it's usually just smart to hit the reset button. And, you know, Rivera had a good run. I mean, 9 seasons, 2 Coach of the Year awards. You know, you got to a Super Bowl once. You even saw Cam win the MVP. Like, it's a good run, but, you know, nothing in the NFL lasts forever unless you're the Patriots.
Yeah, by the way, you know, I was thinking as we were talking about how you and I spoke about this team before the season and how excited I was about the front seven. They were undergoing a scheme change. But even with all that talent, yeah, and you think, okay, maybe they're sacrificing stopping the run at the expense of a pass rush, but they actually ranked 19th in our pass rush win rate, which is way too low for the level of talent in that unit. So it does feel like a reset is afoot. I got to think, moving on from Rivera, and one would think Herney, given who David Tepper is, the language he just put out about, you know, the organizational changes that are, he didn't say anything about Herney, but you got to think he's kind of a forward-thinking guy, you know, who's more likely to maybe to take an analytical approach. So one would think that they're going to kind of rip the Band-Aid, and one also thinks this probably makes it more likely that they're going to move on from Cam with Rivera and potentially Herney gone. So interesting changes afoot in Carolina. Ooh, the Seahawks are playing the Panthers. Really something that needed to be said to myself aloud on this podcast. But we're not talking about the Seahawks today after their glorious win. I want to start, Charles, with a good game, the best game. Because the other two, I said these are all interesting games, but I think you can quibble with whether the other two games we're going to talk about are, like, great games, right? But they're more so teams that are on, like, the playoff fringes that I want to talk about. But two teams that are probably undeniably, I think they're both, I know the Ravens are, I don't know about the Bills, if they've locked it in yet, I'll pull that up. But the Ravens-Bills is one of the best games of the weekend. Two quarterbacks who were both heavily scrutinized, you know, coming out of the draft, one who went a lot earlier than the other in Josh Allen, a Ravens team that we have talked about a lot on this podcast. But let's start there because I have a lot to talk about with the Bills, and I really want to talk about the Bills offense, and I haven't talked about it enough on this podcast. But I want to ask you first about the Ravens, Charles. You know, they just played, I wouldn't call it the pre-Super Bowl Super Bowl yet, but they played the Niners, and it was like a really great, it was to me, while it wasn't the most exciting game, it was obviously the two best teams duking it out. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, even in that torrential downpour, like, they still showed, like, okay, I don't know if the 49ers are going to make it to the Super Bowl. I think right now I feel more confident in the Ravens making it to the Super Bowl than the 49ers, just because, I mean, there's a chance that the 49ers might not even get a home game in the playoffs because they could still end up with the fifth seed. But when you watch that, that definitely felt like, okay, these are the two heavyweights in the NFL where, you know, you have Lamar Jackson and that offensive line going against the 49ers defensive line. They are just
power through Lenny.
I'm about to say, is that Lenny?
Yeah, it is. And I don't know what we, there's no one knocking. I don't know if it's something you said. Maybe he quibbles with the idea that these are the two best teams in the NFL. I think it's over. I think it's over. Leave that in, Dan. Tell me what you saw out of Lamar in this game. And we should add, this was like a horrible weather conditions, which clearly influenced both teams' abilities to pass.
Yeah.
What did you see out of him?
Well, with Lamar, it was one of the things that got me excited for him coming out of Louisville, because I remember in Lamar's last game at Louisville, they were playing Mississippi State in a bowl game. And Lamar threw four interceptions in that game, I want to say, because I remember he like almost doubled his season total in interceptions in that one game. And, you know, he still gave him a chance to win at the end of the game because he was just so good at running the ball and maximizing every opportunity that he got on the ground. And that's kind of the feel that I got, again, watching that game against the 49ers, where this Ravens team, their offense is so unique and so diverse, where they're one of the few teams where if the pass game isn't working, their run game is good enough to keep them in just about every single game. And, you know, luckily for them, it was a little bit of a low-scoring game for them. So at the end, they were able to get that field goal. But they can play you in just about any way. You know, if they want to run up the score, if they have those opportunities, we saw, like, back-to-back weeks against the Texans and the Rams, they can do that. And Lamar just gives you so much, like, room for error in your offense, because you know that if you can't throw, you can still produce on the ground. I'm not sure if this is the case now, but going into that game against the 49ers, the Ravens had three of the top five runners in the league in terms of yards per carry, with Lamar, Mark Ingram, and Gus Edwards. So, you know, what they're doing on the ground is unbelievable. And if a team like the 49ers can't stop them on the ground, like, if Lamar is still going to get 16 carries for 101 yards and a touchdown versus the 49ers, and they have, you know, a zillion first-round picks on defense, or if they can go and make Aaron Donald look like just an ordinary defensive tackle in that game against the Rams, where he has one of the worst games of his career against that team, you know, it's really scary to think about not only what this team can be for the rest of the season, but what they can do in the future. Because, I mean, you got to think about it. At receiver, they have Hollywood Brown, who he's been kind of in and out of the lineup, but he's a dynamic player. And outside of that, in the passing game, they're just kind of relying on tight ends and guys like Seth Roberts and Willie Snead. So, you know, they have, at least personnel-wise, a lot of room to get better. So, you know, I thought that game was just it was just fascinating to see a team still be able to move the ball and still be able to play productive football in a situation where the throwing wasn't always there for them. And, you know, it was a mix between the weather, and Lamar wasn't perfect throwing the ball in that game either. But, you know, I think the fact that he doesn't need to be perfect to still be an extremely valuable player for them, it's just, like, that's got to be kind of scary to watch if you're the rest of the AFC.
Yeah, that was just about a perfect defensive game against Lamar, honestly. Like, that's, you know, probably the best sort of defensive performance you'll get against the Ravens is what you saw in San Francisco. Unfortunately, their offense just didn't execute enough. You know, also, it was Jimmy G who was trying to throw interceptions all over the place. And they were also plagued by the same issues with the rain. And they also ran the ball with great success. It's a really close football game. But I think a couple of things struck me about watching this Niners defense against that Ravens run game, once sort of it became clear that the pass wasn't there. I joked about how the options were faking out Niners linebackers, and I joked about criticizing them, even though I too was fooled on every play. But what was funny, Charles, is even when, so there were, yes, many plays where you would see the, you know, Fred Warner, whoever, bite on whether it was Ingram or Edwards on an option play, and then Lamar would scoot, you know, around the edge. But even when they read him correctly, he's still too fast. That's what's so crazy about watching him play. Like, we talk about the use of motion and the deception and the optionality and all of that, but even when it's not there, even when you know he's gonna run, he will still beat you. And when I say beat you too, it's not like he has to rip off a huge run, because it's the Ravens, they're gonna play four downs, God bless them. Like,
right.
he's gonna get it. So I think that's something that struck me. I thought, if they play that game a few more times, I do think the Niners win some of them if they get a better game out of Jimmy G, just because that defense really is the best in the league. And then the other thing that struck me about this game is how deeply irritating it is that Baltimore has Justin Tucker, right? Like, with kickers struggling across the league for teams that actually need them, they, oh right, have the best kicker in the NFL. He's 22 for 23 this year, and they can use him to ice games when they want to. So that's infuriating. So look, I don't think the Bills defense is as good as San Francisco's. I think they're very good. They do play a lot of zone, and I think that equips them better against Jackson, perhaps, than some other teams. But, you know, in a great Cowboys game, Charles, they weren't terrific against the run. So I wouldn't be surprised, and given how good this Bills secondary is, I wouldn't be surprised if we see another similar performance from Lamar in this one.
Yeah, I mean, neither would I. And it's gotten to the point where, you know, if the 49ers can't stop the run, if the Rams can't stop the run, and, you know, and coming into those games, those were two of the better run defenses in the league. Like, if those teams are just going to get torched from the ground, we might just be at a point where it says it doesn't really matter how good your run defense is. You're probably just going to get smoked regardless, because, you know, not only do you have the scheme where you have to account for the quarterback, where like all 11 players on the field are active participants in the run game on offense, which is something that really only one team is consistently doing in Baltimore. You have to deal with the fact that they have some really, really talented offensive linemen with Ronnie Stanley, former first-round pick. He's great. We all know Marshall Yanda might be a future Hall of Famer if the voters get that one right. Orlando Brown has developed into one of the best right tackles in the league, and he was a third-round pick. I mean, these guys can just maul your face at the point of attack. So not only are you worrying about where is the ball, you have these 340-pound guys just coming down on your face while you're trying to figure it out where the ball is. And then before you can even figure out, either Ingram slipped down the field for 10 yards or Lamar is going around the corner. Like, this is, I don't know if we have any, you know, advanced numbers on this, or I'm sure there are, but I don't have them. But this has got to be one of the best rushing attacks just flat out in the history of the game. And when yes. you look at how efficient that they are on the ground, if you just go by, you know, pro football references, expected point models, they're more efficient than about half the league's passing attacks, which is, I mean,
insane. Just to be positive, by the way, as a run, just to have a positive rushing EPA is already right. bonkers. So
yeah, so what they're doing on the ground is crazy, and then you know, you factor in what Lamar can do as a passer. Like, I just don't know if Buffalo has the horses to slow this thing down. And yeah. you know, Ed Oliver, he had a great game on Thanksgiving against the Cowboys. He's come into his own, but still, you know, I just don't know as a whole if this is the team that can slow down Lamar. You know, McDermott's a great defensive mind for the Bills, and I think he's one of the best defensive coaches, like, flat out in football. But, you know, it just comes to a point where this Baltimore offense is such a fine-tuned machine that even if they can clamp down on the passing game a little bit and make Lamar, you know, at least control him as a passer, it just might not matter because that run offense is so good.
I think that you're right about the Bills defense, which is we have talked about a lot, you know, and they're very good. And it was lovely to see our beloved Ed Oliver start thriving after a kind of slow start this year. I think it's more likely, let me put it this way, that a team, that the Ravens will have a bad day on defense, that we'll see more slip ups from like Earl Thomas and Marcus Peters, like what we saw in the Niners game, than it is, I think, for a defense to stop Lamar altogether, right? And if you had asked me, Charles, like a month ago, I would have said no shot. This Bills offense is terrible. But they've come on really strong over the last few weeks, and credit where credit's due, Josh Allen has been excellent over the last few weeks. Aaron Schatz, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, posted this. Through the first 5 weeks, Josh had a negative 24.8% passing DVOA, which is very bad.
Mm-hmm.
From week 7 through 13, it's been plus 6.7. It's interesting, too. I pulled up his numbers. I missed all this. I've always felt the comp for him was Cam Newton. But it, you know, like that's where like the potential was there. And when you pull up their second season numbers, there's a lot of similarities there. Cam was better over the course of the whole second season, but if you know, narrow the window for Josh to the last month and a half or so, it's very similar. And you know, I think there's, you can put a lot of it on Dable, and I'll talk about that in a second, but he just looks like he's developing as a quarterback. He is making better decisions. He's, you know, a lot of times, and I think over the beginning of the season, he would play like a really good, really great quarter or two, but he wouldn't put together a complete game, and he'd make these boneheaded mistakes, not go through his reads, try to, you know, just turn over the ball, and that's gone. He stopped kind of locking into guys as much. I don't think the deep ball is perfect yet, but we're finally starting to see that line up a bit, which, you know, given his strength, would be remarkable. He's holding onto the ball less long. He's making the right pre-snap reads. So if you're a Bills fan, you have to be thrilled with what you've seen over the last few weeks.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that Thanksgiving game was huge, because I think it gave at least, you know, your casual football fan the idea that Josh Allen can play a little bit, because I think that was his first nationally televised game.
Yes. If you had only seen that game, you'd probably think Josh Allen's the best quarterback in the NFL.
Right. So, you know, I think that was big for his national image. But, you know, he definitely has improved over the past, you know, I think over the last 11 games. I was looking at last night, he's thrown like 13 touchdowns to just 2 interceptions, which is, you know, it's pretty impressive considering the fact that he was just seen as like this incredibly raw passer that didn't really know what he was doing. And, you know, I think one thing that you really see improved from him is the process looks a lot easier for him in terms of playing football. Because, you know, even earlier this year, you know, me and my friend Justice, we were laughing about it, because when we first watched Josh Allen play this season, we were talking about how Josh Allen looked like every time he caught the pass, he caught the shotgun snap, he was almost waking up mid-play. Like, he would catch the snap and then, like, fall asleep for a second and then come to. And then at that point, you know, he's already getting sacked or he's throwing a late pass. But now it's all, like, there's a process to it. I'm going to catch a snap. I'm going to get back to my drop. By the time I finish my drop, that ball's going to be out. And that's a huge improvement over where he was earlier this year and late last year. And I like the fact that he's kind of cut back on, instead of using this, you know, howitzer for a right arm that he has, instead of launching that ball 70 yards down the field, he's used it to his advantage, like in an intermediate game. Because if his receivers can get a step, like what he's done with John Brown this season, or even Dawson Knox, a tight end, a few times, if those guys can get a step, he has the arm strength to just rifle the ball into just about any window. And that's something that he's learned about his own game, and I think it's been a big improvement in terms of maximizing these efficiency on these pass plays. So, you know, I think one of my favorite throws from him, I think it was last week when they were playing the Dolphins, and the Dolphins were in cover 2, and he hit John Brown like in the honey hole along the sideline, and I mean just
I remember that ball
40 yards across the field on a rail, and then John Brown scored the touchdowns. And you know, those are the plays that really excite any fan of football. Like, no matter what your pre-draft analysis of them was, like, if you can see someone make that throw, you want to see them continue to make that throw. So, you know, I hope Josh sounds good. I hope he can continue this, because, one, it'd be nice if we could have, you know, another young quarterback to get excited about as the, you know, the old guard kind of moves along and retires. And two, you know, just anytime you can see somebody with that level of physical ability, you know, it's almost the same thing with Lamar. You know, you want to see these guys maximize their skill because it's just, they're just a blast to watch. Like, I don't know anyone who didn't watch Josh Allen on Thanksgiving say, you know, that was actually pretty entertaining to watch him just rip the ball down the field. He can make plays with his legs. And, you know, it's almost like over the past month or so, it's like a controlled level of chaos that he's playing in. And it's just a blast to watch.
Yeah, and, you know, I tweeted this after the game that I thought, like, Brandon Bean had the best offseason, at which point a bunch of angry Niners fans jumped into my mention. But, you know, buck for buck, these signings have been incredible. You mentioned the Ravens' offensive line. The Bills' offensive line has been right there with them. And, you know, obviously they did pay a lot of money for Mitch Morse, but Quentin Spain, John Feliciano, who was the... they signed like 2 years and like less than $8 million have been really, really good. And then Brown and Beasley really have not only been excellent, but have been excellent for Josh Allen. First, John Brown was open the entire first half of the season. It would drive me crazy. And then Allen started to hit him. And then I think what you've seen over the last few games, during this like stretch of very good offense from them, is Brown has been double teamed and bracketed a bit more, and he's been finding Beasley, who's basically like a human zone beater, right? And I think you saw that on Thanksgiving in particular on that excellent touchdown pass. So, you know, if he can like play efficient football with those two pass catchers, I think that's kind of the perfect complement of weapons for him. Much has been made of Dable. It's so funny, by the way. After the Patriots game, you know, he was really bad, and the offense was struggling in the beginning of the year. It was all the defense. You saw people calling for, like, Dable's firing, or like, he was heavily criticized. And it just, I praised him back then and received some criticism, but I really think it was more just that they weren't executing his game plan. But they have made some tweaks. You know, he famously moved upstairs and also shaved his beard. But beyond that, they've played a lot more no huddle, and they've gotten Robert Foster on the field using more 11, and I think that's worked as well, just kind of getting their best players out there. So all that said, I think if the Bills want any hope at this one, it can't just be a defensive grind fest. I think Allen needs to exploit those Ravens corners, and I think, you know, there's some hope based on what we've seen lately.
Yeah, there's definitely some hope. You know, I'm kind of interested to see, like, if the Bills can win this game, like, is there a chance that they can get back into the AFC East hunt? And, you know, like Dable, he's done such a good job. And I remember, like, last year when they beat the Vikings, and, yeah, I think they were just dealing with a ton of short fields, and they got a bunch of turnovers on Kirk Cousins. But they got... Like, Dable was just scheming guys wide open against Mike Zimmer's defense. That's when I was like, okay, you know, this guy might actually be, you know, a pretty talented play caller. And now he's got the personnel. Like, it's almost a little bit to me like, not that he's Kyle Shanahan, but like when you watch Kyle Shanahan in his first year with the 49ers, like, you see these guys running wide open, but whoever the quarterback was, whether it be Hoyer or Beathard or whatever, they were just missing these throws. You see it, it's like if they could just get a little bit more talent at the quarterback position or the offensive line or what have you, then this thing could really take off. And now I think you're starting to see the same thing with the Bills. And, you know, if they can keep this up and if they can beat the Ravens, like, we might have to start taking this team seriously as a team that might not – I don't want to say they'll beat the Patriots, but at least can, like, make some noise in the playoffs and potentially – get into that home slot against the AFC East, or for the AFC East, especially if, you know, if this Patriots offense still keeps sputtering. Like, I think that's a very real possibility, but they still have to go out and do it first.
Yeah, they have to. I mean, Pats would have to lose to the Chiefs. Not impossible. And then
to the Bills?
They'd have to go to Foxborough and beat them.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, before we get to the next game, I want to take a second to tell you about ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, and growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a new game artist to grow with her education tech company. But then she switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference. And you can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And by using ZipRecruiter's screening questions to filter candidates, Gretchen found it easier to focus on the best ones than find the right one. In fact, after posting her job on ZipRecruiter, Gretchen said she was honestly surprised she found qualified applicants so quickly and hired a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA. So before we get to Giants Eagles, I forgot to mention, going to skip the mailbag this week because we did a mega mailbag last week and got through a lot of questions, but we will, of course, bring it back. Charles, I'm going to treat this like my personal mailbag and ask you about the New York Football Giants, because that is the team you cover. I actually have watched them a lot this year.
I like
watching the rookie quarterback. I like watching the rookie quarterbacks. And I'm going to start with this question. I have been reluctant to talk too much about Mr. Senor Dimes, for reasons, but
yeah.
I'm going to throw out a comp.
Okay.
Is he Duke's Jameis Winston?
In terms of, like...
is that after the first season, is that the best comp we've got for Daniel Jones?
I think that's a pretty good comp. I mean, also, to be honest with you, Eli's a pretty good comp, too. Like, and I guess you could also say that Jameis is on that Eli Manning spectrum too, where
trying to be more creative.
Yeah, a little bit more creative. Daniel Jones is, he's okay, I guess. I think he's good, like when everything's clean for him, where, you know, the pass protection's okay, and he can kind of hit these short to intermediate routes. I don't think he's a very good deep thrower at all. Even though he is pretty aggressive down the field. It's just the turnovers, man. Like, he's turning over at a rate that I don't think I've seen, like, in person before, where he started 11 games now, and if you have the fumbles, the interceptions, and the dropped interceptions, he has, like, 35 potential turnovers in 11 games. And, you know, not all of that is his fault, because he's dealt with some offensive line turmoil. Like, I think versus the Jets, they were down to their third-string tackle and, like, their second-string guard or center. And, you know, Jamal Adams had 2 strip sacks in that game. And, you know, how many times are you going to see a safety get 2 strip sacks in the game? So, you know, the supporting cast hasn't been great, but or not that they've been great. They've been pretty banged up all season long. But outside of that, you know, he's just got to be more consistent in terms of taking care of the ball, because it's just very careless. You know, Daniel Jones kind of reminds me of, like, he reminds me of these guys that think they have physical abilities beyond what they actually have. Like when you watch Jacoby Brissett and he tries to run, you know, Jacoby, you know, you're not a 4-6 guy. You get hawked from behind, like, that happens. Or even Dwayne Haskins did that on Sunday.
Exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I guess you know exactly what I'm talking about. Where he tried
they
to
know
run
exactly and, the player you're talking about. Yeah,
and he got tackled before he even got back to the line of scrimmage. And Daniel Jones, he plays like he has a stronger arm than he does. Where if you watch this interception that he had against the Packers on Sunday, and
which one?
it was the first one to Kevin King, where he's taken a long time to hit that out route on the side of the field. Where you know, if you're someone like Cam Newton, and you have or Patrick Mahomes, you can afford to be a little bit late on those, like, outbreaking patterns, because you know that you have the arm strength to make up for whatever mental process, like, slows you down. But he doesn't have that. So when he throws these out routes to the far side of the field, and he's taking those hitches and he's trying to wait and see it develop, he doesn't have the margin for error to not be on time with those throws. So, you know, you see that interception with Kevin King. You almost saw one the week before against the Bears, where he almost threw an interception on the flat, because these balls, like, they're hanging in the air for a long time on these outbreaking throws. And I think for him to be successful long-term, that process has got to speed up. And to be fair, you know, he's a rookie, so this is something that can definitely get better with time. But if you're going to be dealing with the physical skill set that he has, one that's not, you know, he doesn't have a very strong arm. I would even categorize it as below average. And, you know, he's not like this world-beating athlete, even though, I think he's a little bit more mobile than he gets credit for. But, you know, he's not.
Wait.
Okay.
Don't do that. He is mobile, but let's not. I got to ding you for a sneaky athletic there.
Yeah, you're right. I did throw a cliche.
You felt it coming out of your mouth, and you knew it was wrong. I agree. That's why I was hoping they would put him, I guess, like, build an offense around those skill sets. You know, he can execute RPOs. He can execute the read option, too. I mean, because I think everything you're right about sort of the somewhat disconnect between the mental and physical tools, it's not that his mental tools aren't there. It's his misperception, I think, of his physical tools sometimes can lead to some of these problems. I think you're right to point out, obviously the weapons have been injured. Although Giants fans, just let me say something nice. I love Darius Slayton. I loved him since the preseason. Yeah. There was like, That game where Jones came in for the first time and everyone was like, holy smokes, he's great. Because he had like incredible, it wasn't incredible, Darius Slayton made an incredible catch and everyone was like, Daniel Jones. And I was like, Daniel Jones, Darius Slayton just made an amazing catch. He is electric. So he looks like a phenomenal find for them. So I'm excited about him. But beyond that, guys have been banged up. Saquon, I don't know. You can tell me perhaps what you think is wrong with him. And then obviously, while the fumbles are approaching record-breaking territory, a fair amount of them can, I would say you can assign, can't assign the fumbles in particular to the offensive line, but they've been a dumpster fire.
I think I saw Sam Monson for Pro Football Focus. Yesterday he tweeted out, so Daniel Jones has fumbled the ball he's fumbled the ball 15 times this season, and 8 of them have been directly attributed to him. So it's not all his fault. Obviously, I mean, 8 fumbles and 11 starts, still pretty alarming stat, but it's not all his fault. And like you said, Saquon, I don't think he's been healthy all season. If you ask him, he will swear up and down to you that he's fine, and he'll point to literally the one play where he breaks off like a 20-yard run and say, you know, well, was I hurt on that play? Well, I guess not, but you can look at the other ones, and we can all see that not to accuse you of rushing back, but he did come back really quickly for what we know about high ankle sprains. I think he was only out like 3 or 4 games, and he's having a really rough stretch. And like, you pair that in with some of the injuries that have on the offensive line, it's not like Daniel Jones has had this running game to lean on that, you know, we kind of praise or we kind of expect rookie quarterbacks to have to succeed. You know, a lot of it has just been like, all right, well, we can't run the ball. Daniel Jones, you know, you got to go make some plays. And Sterling Shepard, he missed most of the season with a concussion. Golden Tate was out on Sunday. Evan Ingram has been out for various reasons this season. It's just been...
That, I think, has been the low-key biggest issue of all, personally. But
Yeah, because in that game, that first game against the Bucks, Evan Ingram was making big plays. So, you know, he hasn't really had that. They really have just not been able to... Like, I don't know if they've had one game this season where Golden Tate, Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard, and Saquon have all played together, which I think tells a lot about the continuity that they struggle with this season. But, you know, in his own right, he's got to get better at taking care of the ball. And that's going to be what separates him from, you know, becoming late career Eli Manning versus what I think his ceiling could be is like a Jimmy Garoppolo type, where if you put the pieces around him and he can kind of make these quick intermediate decisions and RPOs and stuff like that, I think you can build an efficient passing game around him. But I don't know if he's ever going to be this guy that, you know, leads the league in yards per attempt or anything like that. But, you know, I think at the baseline level with Daniel Jones, we learned that this season he's competent. And, you know, that's not bad for a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you about the arm strength, which was a knock coming out of college, but I will say he throws with more touch than I thought. You know, some of those intermediate passes you alluded to, he places the ball really well. There is a skill set there. I think, so let me ask you this. They've got a lot of cap space next year. This is a bad roster. I think it's pretty fair to say. You know, the draft, we talked about Jones. But Dexter Lawrence, another player who intermittently has been, I think, a lot better than I thought. I still don't love the value. DeAndre Baker, to my eye, has been real bad.
We don't even start there.
The Leonard Williams trade, it continues to be inexplicable to me. So you cover this team. Let me ask you. You're building around Daniel Jones. I think, is Remmers a free agent after this year?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how long ago he got here.
Yep. Just pulled it. Yeah. So he is. So what would you focus on in terms of the draft and free agency to build around Jones?
I think there's, like, it's one of those teams where you're so far away on defense that I don't even know how much you can realistically get better, like in an off season, especially now that you've traded away a third and fifth round pick for Leonard Williams. And, you know, by all accounts, the Giants expect to extend Leonard, and Leonard told me personally that he would love to be in New York. So I expect them to, you know, pour some assets into Leonard Williams. I don't know how much, because he just got his first tackle for loss of the season. You know, both teams, but the Jets and Giants, just got his first tackle for loss of the season on Sunday against Green Bay. So, you know, this defense is so far away from being good. And I think you do have some promising players in the secondary, like Julian Love. He stepped in as strong safety for Jabril Peppers this past Sunday. And, you know, he was like the only Giants defensive player that wasn't a complete train wreck. You have a couple pieces, but it's so far away. Like, I think you just want to focus more on the offense. And let's say, you know, you let Mike Remmers walk, you're probably going to end up releasing Nate Solder, because I just don't know if he can play anymore. Like, physically, he hasn't been able to make it through the whole season. His level of play has declined pretty hard this season. I think you can live with the skill talent you have, assuming everyone's healthy. Like, Darius Slayton has been a fantastic surprise. Like, I think he's been phenomenal all year. We know Sterling Shepard, he's probably an above-average receiver in this league. They got money tied in the Golden Tate for at least another season, probably. So there isn't too much you can do at the receiver spot, not too much you even really need to do. I think you got to get better up front, because a lot of these issues that Saquon Barkley has had this year, outside of him maybe coming back from the injury too early, is the blocking has just been, like, putrid. In the, like, the run blocking has been awful. Willie Hernandez he's been, not that he's bad, but he hasn't taken that next step that you would expect him to, especially after such a rock solid rookie year. And, you know, when someone like Saquon Barkley goes into the game against the Jets and gets 1 yard on 13 carries, a single yard.
Not great.
You know, you got to look at stuff that's just beyond Saquon's hurt, and that's that. You know, the offensive line is just getting mauled at the point of attack. They're getting blown by speed rushers. Like, it's pretty rough out here for as far as the offensive line goes. So I think you might have a keeper in Zeiler and Hernandez, but you probably got to start over at left guard, center, and right tackle, which is a big task to ask in one offseason. But when you spend that first-round pick on Daniel Jones, you just got to make sure that works out. Like, that's the most important thing for this team. So I think fixing the offensive line is paramount for them. And, you know, on defense, they've spent resources on defense. Like, they traded, like we just talked about, they traded the 3 and the 5 for Leonard Williams. Mm-hmm. They spent a first-round pick on DeAndre Baker. They spent a first-round pick on Dexter Lawrence. They drafted Julian Love. They added Corey Ballantyne. Like, even this year, they also drafted Oshane Ximenes, who's playing edge for them. They drafted Lorenzo Carter last year fairly high in the third round. So, you know, it's not to say that they haven't been trying on defense, but the picks just quite haven't worked out, or these guys are still young and trying to figure out their way. So, you know, I think for them, if they do have a new coaching staff, or even if they don't have a new coaching staff, you've got to protect Daniel Jones a little bit better, because that's the most important thing for them moving forward, making sure that he gets straight. So, you know, the wide receiver room is probably about as set as it'll be. Now you just got to go fix out that offensive line. But, you know, the way that they're headed, and, you know, draft talk is a little premature around this time this year. The way that they're headed at 2-10, they might still end up taking defense, because, like, if you're there at the number two pick in the draft and the Bengals are first and they pick Joe Burrow, like, you can't not pick Chase Young if you're there.
Question. Unfortunately, that's what I hate so much of this Lenny trade, is if you had the draft capital, you might be worth going out and getting Chase anyways, even if they're not picking second, but they might not have the resources to do so, and I'm sure they'll be vying with our Falcons.
Woohoo.
Yeah, and to bring this full circle, we probably should have mentioned this up top with Ron Rivera getting fired. You got to think people are going to look at the Giants as a potential landing spot, Charles. Maybe, I mean, I guess it would be a question whether Ron's going to get a job as a head coach or a defensive coordinator, but that would be a reunion between him and Dave Gettleman. So that seems like a plausible. But we talked a lot about the Giants, and everybody deal with it. I haven't talked about them all season, and also I have Charles on the show today. But part of the reason I want to talk about this game in particular was they're playing the Eagles, who are an endlessly fascinating team to me. It's really funny. It's not funny how much they've struggled and that they lost to the Dolphins. But what I do find funny is, you know, we're talking about the Eagles like they're one of the worst teams in the NFL and a total disgrace. And it was, I just pulled up their efficiency numbers. They're 14th in pass offense, 7th in rush offense, 10th in pass defense, 8th in rush defense. Like, they still have the bones of a good team, if that makes sense, or a decent team. But I think what you saw in this Dolphins game is, like, they haven't put it all together. They've rarely put it all together this season. Either the offense has been bad and the defense has carried them. The defense came in, they were awful at the beginning of the season, and then they improved. But then in this Dolphins game, they were horrendous, and the offense actually played well. It's like they just haven't put together a complete game. So it's hard for me to even know where to begin when talking about sort of their failings. I think the biggest question people have is, how much can you attribute to injuries, the loss of Malik Johnson, DeSean Jackson? How much is coaching, which I think is something we're hearing more and more of, critiques of both Peterson, certainly of Mike Rowe, and also of Jim Schwartz in the last game, and how much of it is just execution on the part of the players themselves?
Yeah, I don't know, because it's weird what happened to them, because coming into the season, not only was it this team is the best team in the NFC and like a potential Super Bowl contender, it was also they have the deepest roster. And you would think that if we are coming out as the almighty and all-knowing media, that you have the deepest roster in the NFL, you'd think you'd be able to weather the storm on these injuries a little bit better, but they just haven't been able to. So the biggest issue, or the biggest question I have with the Eagles, that I don't even know if it can be answered this year, is, like, how good is Carson Wentz? Because you would hope, at least, if you're going to give this guy top five quarterback money and extend him for a long time and have him be the face of your franchise, that you'd be able to overcome this a little bit. And I know that maybe it's just a bit of a situation where he hasn't been able to develop this chemistry with his receivers. And, you know, even in that Seahawks game, like, you saw it, where it not only was he off, but his receivers are off. And, you know, you can't even really run a passing offense if the two main components of your passing offense aren't even on the same page. So, and that's kind of been the story of at least, you know, their recent stretch, where they just don't really look like a cohesively good football team, even though we know that they have a ton of good players. Like, you look at their offensive line, defensive line, even their tight ends, and when they're healthy, like, their receivers to a degree, that it looks like a team that should be better than 5-7, and losing to a team that pretty much all of us thought were trying to lose coming into the season and have basically stripped down their entire roster for parts in the Miami Dolphins. So
yeah.
It's almost confusing because we all know that they should be better, but they aren't. And like you said, even the advanced stats or DVOA, whatever you were referencing, they still have like the pieces of a good team, but they just haven't been able to put it together. And
it's slippery. It's slippery. Yeah, it's like changing game to game. I think it's like it's hard to diagnose the problems with this team because I think they're different in every game, quite frankly. I mean, look, the receivers have been obviously trash all year.
Horrible.
You know, there have been games where Jeffrey showed up, but and there's been games where the defense has been good. I mean, the secondary's been mostly bad. I mean, they were awful against the Dolphins. But I think it's hard to, like, after the Eagles-Seahawks game, I was ready to just go in on Wentz. I was like, you know, his footwork looks terrible. His pocket movement is awful. He's airmailing screens. He's fumbling. And then in this Dolphins game, he looked kind of fine. I mean, it's the Dolphins defense, yes, but I think having Lane Johnson back in obviously made a huge difference. Like, he's not a bad quarterback by any means, but it's just kind of hard. Like, they're just not putting it all together. I did find something compelling. Our friend, former podcast guest Stephen Ruiz, had an interesting article this week about how, you know, the Eagles are famous for using 12 personnel, two tight ends. They use it more than anyone else in the NFL. And he found that they were, on a per play basis, 31st in EPA off of 12 personnel, which is crazy to me, by the way. So on one hand, I could criticize Doug Peterson for not, you know, changing the game plan when they've had a lack of success using those groupings. But then on the other hand, what wide receiver is he going to put in? Mac Hollins, right? So it's kind of hard. I think it really, you do have to split the criticism between him, between Howie Roseman for not going out and getting, I mean, you know, you can't predict DeSean Jackson and Malik Jackson getting hurt, but even so, it does feel like they should have taken more steps to bolster the secondary and the wide receiver group. All right, we're going to talk about one more game. A team that is trending in a much more positive direction and a team that's trending in a negative direction. Before we do, tell you quickly about Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy, getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully now, there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes. The best part? Once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day. Over 300,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/Mina to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/Mina. Are you ready to accept the Tennessee Titans into your heart?
I guess I'm ready.
Tighten up?
Tighten up.
Okay, let me rephrase that. Are you ready to accept a world in which Ryan Tannehill is the most beloved by advanced metrics quarterback in the NFL?
Did you see Ben Baldwin's CPOE EPA rankings today?
Where's Tannehill?
Yeah, he's number one.
Yeah. I mean, he's number one in the dumb stats. His passer rating this season is 113.9. That's second. In six starts, he's had 500+ games. But he's also Next Gen Stats has that completion percentage above expected completion percentage. He's number one by like a mile in that. So I went back and watched a little bit of Tannehill to see how he's been doing it. And this last game, he wasn't as good. He did have this like incredible 40-yard pass, hold on, to Khalif Raymond, who is a person I learned existed while watching that clip. But I think that was probably, like, he didn't really win them that game. But it is interesting, Charles, like, it does feel like they've sort of built the perfect offense for his skill set, if that makes sense, which is something that obviously did not happen in Miami.
Yeah, I remember, I think the first Tannehill game I watched this year was that Chiefs game where on that last drive of the game, I mean, I thought I was watching like a first ballot Hall of Famer because he like had the run for 22 yards and then he comes back, throws two strikes for like 60 yards down the field, and then scores a touchdown, scores a 2-point conversion. I was like, yo, I don't even know what this is, but that's not the Ryan Tannehill that I'm used to watching. And
wow, yet again, Charles McDonald underestimating the mobility of my quarterback.
No, I'm not.
We know that about Tannehill.
I wasn't underestimating him. He played receiver at Texas A&M. I know he's a good athlete.
Yeah,
I was just saying, like, I didn't know that he had the ability to do a 90-yard game-winning drive. Like, I don't think I've ever seen him do that before. I really like the way this offense is set up because I was a big fan of A.J. Brown, the Ole Miss
receiver
coming out of the draft. He is great. And when you just look at what he was able to do in college, I mean, he was I think he had two or three straight 1,000-yard seasons, and he was doing that at such a young age. So, you know, you got him and Corey Davis, and Derrick Henry is coming along and dominating December, as he seems to do every single year. You know, I don't really know what the ceiling on this team is, but you're right. Like, the way that this thing is structured for Tannehill, I don't think it's a stretch to say, I mean, this might even be a rather obvious statement, that this is the best supporting cast that he's had in his career, where it's like all these pieces are working together for him, and he's almost the perfect quarterback to unlock this thing and make it work. So I think this is the first time in my life since Steve McNair was there where I can honestly say, like, I enjoy watching the Tennessee Titans play offense. Like, I don't know what's going on here. And the fact that it's like Ryan Tannehill leading this resurgence, it's amazing to watch. Like, he's tied right now for the league with Patrick Mahomes in terms of adjusted yards per attempt, which, you know, if you're listening, you don't know, it converts touchdowns and interceptions into yards and makes like one neat yards per attempt number. I don't think he's doing that great in terms of QBR, but when you just watch him play, it's like a totally different quarterback that we've seen that was playing in, you know, these really short, we're going to throw the ball at Jarvis Landry a million times a game, screen stuff that he was doing with Adam Gase. And now he's got an offensive coordinator with Arthur Smith, who, when Mariota was a quarterback, looked like a lame duck guy. And now he's leading one of the better offenses in the league over the past few weeks. It's really strange to watch. And I weirdly hope that the Tennessee Titans can sneak into the playoffs somehow, because I just want to see what they can do in a high-stakes situation. Like, we've seen the comeback against the Chiefs, even though a little bit of that was Andy Reid and his usual clock management gaffes. But I would just love to see them get into the playoffs and play in the high-stake games and have a chance to win in a normal way, I would say. Because last time they won, that was when they played against the Chiefs in the playoffs, and Mariota caught that pass that was batted down.
To himself, that was amazing.
Touchdown. Like, I'm really interested to see if this team is legit and if they can continue like this explosive offense and efficient offense in the postseason.
Mm-hmm. Over the last three games, Derrick Henry has rushed for 149 yards, 159 yards, and 188 yards. Which is just so great. It's the offense still, the line is still very bad at pass pro. They're good at run blocking, but you actually see. And I think Tannehill has some of the same problems as Mariota. I do think he holds on to it too long, but that offensive line does struggle in that regard. That said, he's kind of doing everything they wanted Mariota to do. It's a simple offense, really. It's a lot of boots, a lot of screens, but he's executing well. And unlike, I think, Mariota over the last couple of years, the mobility is there in a way that threatens defenses. It's guys like Henry, A.J. Brown, just really strong, athletic weapons. Just get him the ball, let them run dudes over. It seems to be like a formula that's pretty successful for them. I think This is a plus defense. I don't think they're one of the best defenses in the NFL. I think the secondary, it is probably average. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Fifth best rush defense, 23rd pass. That checks out. Great mm-hmm. linebacker group. I feel like I don't want to say I'm one of the only. That's such a lame thing to say. But you don't really hear enough, I think, about this linebacker group and how good they are. Jayon Brown, I hope I'm saying his name right, but
yeah,
he's been good for 2 years now. Rashawn Evans, also, he's in his second season out of it. He's been really great. And then Harold Landry's got 8 sacks, 11 tackles for loss. So I think with that group, and then, you know, Jarrell Casey hasn't been as unstoppable as he's been in past years, but pairing him with Jeffrey Simmons over the last few games has sort of unlocked him at moments. I mean, this is a defense that's good enough, I think, to keep pace with any of the playoff teams. So we'll see. I mean, I would pick them to win. I mean, the Raiders, who they're playing this weekend, are obviously trending in the wrong direction. They've been outscored 74-12 over the last few games. I don't really want to talk about them at length. I just want to read this quote from Tyrann Mathieu. I'm glad that we were able to capitalize on him being Derek Carr, when he did try to throw the ball down the field. It's rough.
Yeah. I mean, I was rough. At that, obviously, I was at the Jets-Raiders game 2 weeks ago. And, it was just all checkdowns the entire game. Like, he did not test the Jets defense whatsoever. And then they got behind so quickly, so fast that I think he was pulled with, 3 minutes left in the third quarter. And that Raiders team, I was intrigued by them, but even going into that Jets game where they were 6-4, they still had a negative point differential on the season. And I think even if you go back and you go to Pro Football Reference and you look at each team's expected wins and losses, coming into that game they were 6-4, but their expected win and losses was 3-7. So they were a team that was kind of outperforming expectations at the time, or getting lucky in these close games. And you know, maybe over the past 2 weeks, we've seen what this team might actually be, which is pretty boring.
They're an average football team, basically.
Yeah.
I still think, I mean, if you're a Raiders fan too, I'm not totally dispirited. A lot of these rookies look really good. I'm still excited about, Mo Hurst and Hunter Renfrow, who didn't play. Apparently Hunter Renfrow was the key to the entire Raiders offense all along. Who knew? By the way, Tyrell Williams, real disappointment there. And I think that's the issue. This is supposed to be an evaluation year of Derek Carr. And after the first half of the season, you're thinking, all right, we're going to definitely gonna stick with him. And then now he's struggling. And the reason I thought it would be a good year to evaluate him is because I thought, okay, they finally have weapons around him. This is when they signed Brown too. And I thought, okay, they can tell what they have. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who you put around him. It's just his brain. I wish you could take a little bit of Daniel Jones and Jameis Winston, what's in their brain, and do a little bit of a swap, an 80-20 situation. Take 20% of Derek Carr and put it in their brains, and take 20% of Winston and Jones and put it in Derek Carr's brain.
Yeah, it's just got to be more aggressive, if you want to consistently score points. And, I think you made a good point. There is stuff to be excited about. Josh Jacobs has been excellent all season. I think that offensive line is pretty good to me. I love watching Trent Brown play because, you 6'8", 370, 380-pound guys just should not move, as well as he does. And I don't know. It's just one of those planet theory things where I just can't get enough of watching some of those guys on the offensive line. So they still have the first round pick from the Khalil Mack trade for next year too, right?
I think so, yeah. By the way, you could really argue either side of that now.
Yeah, it almost,
it's a whole other, we could do a whole podcast on that.
Yeah, it's not a lose-lose situation, but I mean,
no.
The Bears probably got the short end of the stick there, because he's great, but I think teams have showed this year you can neutralize him a little bit if you throw three bodies at him. Yeah, you can block him, and that's a viable way to play offense when Leonard Floyd doesn't show up, and now it's all on Trubisky, and we know Trubisky, you know, he's Trubisky. So, you know, it's a little bit of a mistake, but just got to see how those picks pan out for the Raiders.
All right, before we get to dinks and dunks, I wanted to tell you guys about two podcasts. One is ESPN Daily, hosted by yours truly. You can find it on iTunes, Spotify, ESPN app, wherever you get your podcast. 20 minutes every day, a different sports story. The other one is The Right Time with Bobani Jones. This week, Bo discusses Nick Saban under fire at Alabama and Josh Shaw betting against his own team and losing in more ways than one. But I don't know if you have been following that story, Charles. Apparently, he listed his occupation at Caesars as a professional football player.
Yeah,
download and subscribe to The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
First question. It hurts me to ask this as a Matt Ryan defender. You know I'm Matty Ice's number one fan.
Yep.
Is he washed?
No, I don't think he's washed. I don't know. I think he's been hurt. He's put together a couple of games. I think he's been hurt. The pass blocking has been great. I need to see another season of this before I can call him washed. And also, I don't think Dirk Cotter has done him any favors with the play calling either.
No.
Bring back Sark. I mean,
Sark did nothing wrong.
Sark did nothing wrong. I wouldn't have believed that if you told me that like 14 months ago. But when I was actually on board for keeping Sark by the end of the season, just because like the offense had been good enough. The offense was playoff caliber for sure, but the defense was so bad. And then they downgraded from Sark to Dirk Cotter, who just wants to mash the ball behind this crappy offensive line, you know, on first down every single time. And I don't know if I'm not ready to let go of Matt Ryan, because like I've seen him play well at times this season. I saw him play well last season, or if he just needs like another recalibration year. So I think we need to see another year of like this level of production before we say he's washed, like you would say, a Tom Brady.
Mm. All right. Second question, by the way. one game, one field, neutral field, same weapons. Who you want quarterbacking your team, Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes? This is tough because it's like, who's the coach? I feel like that plays a big role in this.
Yeah, they're so different.
You're the coach. You're the coach in this situation.
I think I might roll with Mahomes, honestly. That's tough because like they're both so good. But I
feel like if I was a coach, I would actually be better at game plan with Lamar Jackson because it's more like playing Madden.
Yeah, that's also a good point. But I was thinking for me, like, I think it'd be easier for me personally to build an offense around Mahomes than like Lamar Jackson, because the Ravens this past season, they got help from that old Georgia Tech coach, Paul Johnson, on how to implement some of his option stuff. And like, you have to have like the correct plan and the correct play calling. And I feel like the margin for error when it comes to the passing game is a little bit higher with Mahomes. So I'm going to roll with him as much as it hurts me to say that.
Question three. I swear I'm not being paid to say this. What was your favorite Disney movie as a kid?
My favorite Disney movie as a kid, I have the weirdest answer for this, and it doesn't hold up because I watched it a couple weeks ago, but have you seen Lion King 1.5?
No.
So it's like Lion King, except it's told from the perspective of Timon and Pumbaa, and just like how they're secretly there in the background for like all these major events that happen in the movie. And I remember as a kid, I thought it was like literally the funniest movie I had ever seen in my entire life. And I watched it a couple weeks ago and it didn't quite hold up, but just for nostalgia purposes and how much it made me laugh as a kid, I'm going to roll with Lion King 1.5.
Lion King 1.5. Interesting. I did love Lion King as a kid. I'm a lot older than you. I think I'm like 10 years older than you. Just, I'm very upsetting. Maybe a little less. So I'm kind of like a different generation of Disney movies. So I might be a little bit different. Like I love Have you ever seen Lady and the Tramp?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, good. I like the scene where they eat spaghetti. So we talk a lot about, like, what would be your ideal Super Bowl, you know, like Ravens Seahawks or whatever. Maybe that's just me. What would be the worst but also plausible Super Bowl matchup this year?
The worst but plausible Super matchup? I mean, you got to start with New England. I mean, there is nothing fun about that team right now. Like, the defense is good. Not as suffocating as they were early in the season, but it's probably just a product of who they're playing now. The offense, I think, is just unbelievably boring to watch. So that would have to be my AFC pick. NFC, maybe Vikings. I'll go with the Saints. The Saints, like.
Really? You have to, because, yeah.
Yeah, well, I have to because the whole, you know, Falcons, Drew Brees thing. But, yeah, that would be awful for me. Patriots, Saints, not even just because, you know, you have the 23 aspect and the Falcons-Saints rivalry. I just really don't enjoy watching this new version of Drew Brees where he's not as comfortable taking these deep shots down the field, and a lot of it's short to intermediate. And even, like, Alvin Kamara is not having a great year, especially, like, I think since he got back from injury earlier this year. Those two teams, like, they're good teams, but they're not enjoyable to watch. And above all else, I'm trying to avoid another 13-3 game. And that, I think, as a fan base of the NFL, that's something we should be able to agree on. We don't want another Super Bowl 54 or Super Bowl 53. We need something a little bit more explosive than that. So Patriots-Saints will be my snooze-fest Super Bowl.
Last question, as always, comes from Lenny. Oh, this is interesting. Apparently, he's been spending some time on overthecap.com. He wants to know if you're aware that the Falcons have the second lowest number of cap space of any team in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. You know, any time that you can spend your entire offseason signing offensive linemen and then drafting two in the first round, and you have all these bad contracts like Devontae Freeman, who is not nearly as good as he used to be, and you're still a bad team, it feels great, you know? I think the Bucs were in a similar situation this coming season, coming into the season, where after the draft, they barely had enough cap space to sign all their draft picks. I'm like, man, you guys were like 4-12 last year. How is it even possible? And then the same thing happened to my beloved Atlanta Falcons. So, you know, I think we're in for a very, like, serious offseason of change in Atlanta. And, you know, it just makes you think about that 2016 season and what could have been. Because if they had won that game, they could have lost every game for the rest of time. I wouldn't have cared.
He wants to know if they're going to keep Younghoe Koo, and if he thinks that Atlanta should sign him to a 3-year, $28 million.